Oh, and now it is my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker, Jim C.
From Zoom.
Hi, I'm Jim. I'm an alcoholic. October of 1998, after years of letting alcohol kick my butt and many months of incomprehensible demoralization, I checked myself into a treatment center in Fresno. I had to get past a guy with a clipboard who had a lot of questions, and he started asking him. He had his clipboard out and name, address, you know, telephone number. Are you married? Yeah, I'm married. And he said, "Who's running your life?" And I thought, "What the hell's that supposed to mean? Who's running my life?" And I thought, does he think my wife's running my life? And I said, I'm running my life. And he said, how's that working out for you? A little while later, I did get into the program. There was, into the treatment center. There was 10 other people in there, and they gathered us all together. Same guy, Mark, his name was. Mark said, I got bad news. One of you in this group within 1 year is going to be dead. And he said, five of you are going to go back out. And you're never going to come back. You're going to die out there. Four of you are going to go back out, but you're going to come back in and maybe get some sobriety. And he said, in 1 year, one of you will be sober. And I looked around at the 10 other people, and I thought, you poor bastards, because I was going to be that one guy that was going to make it. That didn't happen, and I'll tell you about that in a little bit. I was born in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, beer capital of the world. Drinking was encouraged. My dad was... He was a quick-tempered guy. He had no problem beating the hell out of you if he felt it was necessary. Went to a Catholic grade school. The nuns felt the same way. This one nun, her name, we called her Sister Bernice. We called her Bernie Claw. She had, because she would just kind of rip the flesh off your arms, if she. it wasn't all bad. I had a pretty good childhood. I went on this website and I saw this thing that gave a listing of the 10 most dangerous toys ever made, and I had owned 7 of those toys, and so I had a lot of fun. I remember at 8 years old I had a bow and arrow, like a real bow and arrow that you could kill people with, But I was always ill at ease. I was always uncomfortable. I was introverted, felt nervous a lot of the times, didn't like to be around a lot of people. And then when I turned 13 years old, all that came to an end. And I think you probably guess why. I had discovered alcohol. Some friends of mine, I was 13 years old, you're hanging out with worthless buddies. I had plenty of worthless friends, Dwayne and Donnie and Dave and Brian and Matt. And these guys, a train had derailed near our neighborhood, and these guys had managed to break into one of the boxcars. And inside that boxcar was gallon jugs of Spignata wine. And most of it, they said, was broken, but they managed to salvage 6 1-gallon bottles of this wine and bring it back to Donnie's house. We had a little fort behind Donnie's garage where we would smoke cigarettes, just act like punks most of the time. But that's where they brought the wine back to, 6 gallons of this stuff. I remember I got my hands on this stuff. It had been in a boxcar that had been sitting in the sun for 3 days, and so the stuff was still warm. I mean, really warm to the touch. And as I drank it, it was horrible stuff. I mean, it was just really bad. But when it hit my stomach and that warm feeling came over me, it was freaking magic, man. It was absolute magic. I loved it. It was, you know, shy. Yeah, right, man. I mean, it was, all that disappeared, you know. Absolutely loved it. It was doing stuff for me that it wasn't doing for these other guys that I was with. And, you know, as you can imagine, drinking warm spinata wine by the gallon, you know, within a few hours, we were on all fours, throwing up, and, you know, deathly ill, you know, went home, you know, parents extremely concerned about what was happening. But the next day when I got up, I was the only guy that showed back up at Donnie's house asking if there was any more wine left. And so I was already, there was already red flags going up the first time I was drinking. Major events in my life, I did drunk. First day of high school, I was drunk. You know, what was one thing I kind of skipped over here? When I was 13, I could actually buy alcohol. Like I said, Wisconsin was a place that, you know, drinking was almost encouraged. And so I was 13 years old, and I could go into White Hen Pantry down the street. And, you know, I mean, I had a little technique. You know, I would buy a newspaper and a pack of gum, you know, a pack of cigarettes, and then tell her to ring it up. And as she was ringing it up, I go, oh, wait a minute, go ahead and throw in that case of beer there too. And that actually worked, you know. So I was able to buy alcohol at 13 years old. And there was a thinking that took over with me too, was that, you know, boy, if one makes me feel this good, you know, what will two do for me? And if two makes me feel this good, you know, what's four gonna do? And you know, there was that thinking really got a hold of me. In fact, you know, to this day, I still, you know, I see somebody at a restaurant or something, and they, you know, they're nursing some glass of wine, and I still don't get that. You know, it's like, you just drink the damn thing. You know, what was the problem? I mean, and, you know, or, God, who was, I was at a barbecue and, just the other day with my neighbor, and he said, you know, they drank. I don't drink, but he drank, but he had a glass of wine. And then I said, you know, did you want another glass of wine? Because my wife drinks too. I mean, she's not an alcoholic, but she's a normie. And so my wife, you know, like, do you want another glass of wine? And he goes, oh, no, I'm starting to feel it. You know, well, isn't that the frickin' point? I mean, you know, it's like, you know, yeah, no kidding, you're starting to feel it. This is the time to start hammering them down. So, you know, this thinking has not gone away. I've got over 16 years of sobriety, and that thinking is still there. First day of high school, I was drunk. Went to a high school of about 3,000 students, standing in front of the, and waiting to get in. My first day, some guy, I don't even know these guys, are standing around. Some guy pulled out a bottle of Southern Comfort, started passing it around. Hey, yeah, right on, Hannah. And I showed up for my first day of high school drunk. First time behind the wheel of a car, I was drunk. Back when I went to high school, they had driver's ed in high school, and after you graduated that, you went to behind the wheel. And so I had been drinking in the afternoon with some buddies and had a behind the wheel that afternoon with my biology teacher, and, you know, got behind the wheel of the car, very first time behind the wheel. You know, and I'd been drinking. How that guy didn't know I was drinking, I don't know, but he didn't. And, you know, I almost sideswiped a car, and so I was drunk driving for first time. So moderation was not in my vocabulary. 16 years old, kind of a my parents sold the house, moved without us. So I was on my own when I was 16. Got my own apartment, finished high school, you know, the whole time drinking. Got a job, got a full-time job over at Children's Hospital, $4 an hour. And the woman, one of the managers came up to me because, you know, I had to get up at like 6 o'clock, but I was drinking all night. So in the morning, one of the managers was talking to me, and she asked me, have you been drinking? And this morning? And I said, no, not this morning, but last night. And she said, I can smell alcohol on your breath, and if you come in like this again, you're fired. And so I had to avoid that manager because I was not going to stop drinking. Eventually, I did get fired from that job. I blamed my brother because I came in late, I had set the alarm and he turned it off. And excuse me, he had turned the alarm off and didn't wake me up. So at that point, I had blamed my brother for getting fired. This was a pattern that I followed for a long time, which was it was other people's fault. All these problems that I was facing all the time were other people's fault. It wasn't really me. It was other people, places, and things that were going on. Managed to get out of high school, actually graduated from high school, and that summer after I got fired it was just like a blur. I can not remember much of it, but I had gotten accepted into the University of Wisconsin. I did have some drive. I was a functional alcoholic. I could do things, and one of the things I wanted to do was go to college, and so I did that. I managed to get good enough grades in high school. You know, I don't know, but I did. That I was accepted into the university. And then this is where things really started taking off because, you know, I mean, alcohol in college was just completely accepted. And so I was getting a lot of trouble with the law. It was very strict. You couldn't have an open beer in the college town I went to. If you had an open beer or open container outside, you were arrested. And so I had gotten arrested for open container a few times. At one time I ran because I saw the guy, and I saw, oh man, he saw me, and I ran. And it was weird because he was right behind me describing me on this, you know, how the guy was keeping up with me, I don't know, because I was running pretty good. But he was on this walkie-talkie, describing me perfectly on this walkie-talkie. You know, we got a young man, 5'9", you know, brown hair, and he was just, you know, describing me perfectly. And here, the guy behind me. Finally, after about 4 blocks, I stopped, and the guy arrested me, charged with resisting arrest and some other stuff, open container. So, I ended up graduating from the university. Never went to that court date, and I had gotten, some months earlier, I had gotten a call from my sister, who was living out in the Bay Area, and that was, she called me, and it was like January in Wisconsin, so it was like 10 below zero out, and she said, I know you're graduating in May, did you want to, do you want to move out here? And I was like, well, what's the temperature out there? He said, like 75 degrees. And I was like, oh, heck yeah, man. You know, I'm going to California. Moved to California. And so it was like a geographic, right? I mean, it was like I had all these problems in Wisconsin. You know, I mean, I was like, man, I'm facing this trial, you know, that I got to go to court and all this stuff. And it's like, I'm just going to pack up and move, go to California. And when I got out there and I got out here, you know, guess what happened? You know, I washed my face in the sink and looked up in the mirror, and there I was, right? I mean, wherever I moved to, I was there. So the problem wasn't going to go away. I mean, in that, you know, so moving was another pattern that I started developing. Got my bachelor's degree in graphic arts. So I got a job at an advertising agency. I went in there. I was actually going in there just to see if they knew of anybody who, you know, like, do you know of anybody who's got a, you know, job in the industry? But when I got in there, The office manager said, "Oh, you're here to apply for the job?" And I said, "Yes, I am." And then she walked me over to some typesetting equipment. Now, I was familiar. This is before computers, right? And so, this typesetting equipment was this giant monstrosity of stuff. I knew I was a little familiar with it, but she said, "Can you run this equipment?" And I said, "Yes, I can." there's two lies right there. And I got that job. I got a job as an art director for an ad agency. And pretty amazing. Yeah, I was pretty astonished this was kind of the tail end of this Mad Men kind of period where, and so drinking was still pretty accepted. And in that agency, they had a full bar. There was a full bar, and you could drink at your desk, So you could have I got my vodka tonic here. And that all worked out really well. And so my drinking started taking on a completely new dimension. It was, their attitude was, we work hard, but we play hard, and I like that. Yeah, that's what we do. At about this time, it was taking me 5 double vodka tonics to get going, And so I would go out to a bar and I would, double vodka tonic, wham, another one. And I would do that 5 times in a row, just right, more one right after the other. And then I got that, I'm ready to go now, it was right around that time that I got my first DUI. I was living by myself, and I wasn't too good living by myself. I was just, sitting in my apartment drinking or going out and drinking, and it was just, it was just constant. And I met my wife. Met my wife when I was drunk, surprisingly, right? Met my wife at a club. I was drunk. And she had a couple of drinks. She didn't really drink. Beautiful girl. I mean, just, just knockout. And I tell my grandkids, they ask me, "How did you meet her?" I said, "Well, I saw her across the room, and I said, she will be mine." And that's what I did. I ended up marrying her. She was foolish enough to marry me. And she didn't really drink. One of those, again, like half glass of wine just sitting there, like, holy cow, And took her back to Wisconsin to meet the family. And guess what happens, right? I get pulled over for speeding, going 35 in a 30. And the cop looks at my driver's license and it'll be right back. Well, guess what was on my record, And so, of course, there's this resisting arrest charge, And so 5 squads pull up, The lights going, guns drawn, get out of the car. And my wife's like, "What in the hell have I got myself into here?" And I'm like, holy shit, And so, anyway, things continued. Drinking, hard drinking continued. Finally got so bad we did another geographic, which was to move to near Delano, a little town outside of Delano. And her parents lived out there. This is like no man's land out there. And a lot of her family lived out there. She comes from a family of 16 kids. So there was her parents and, 5 or 6 brothers who lived on the same block. And the thing about the geographic was, I'm having all these problems in the Bay Area. I got a DUI. It's starting over again. These problems are starting to mount again. And there I was. I washed my face in the sink and looked up in the mirror, and there I was again. And surprisingly, you could find alcohol in the Central Valley. This wasn't a dry county. brother-in-law invited me over for, you know, now my drinking at this point is at a high level. My brother-in-law down the street invites me over to see a boxing match. He says, "Hey, come on over. I got some chicken wings, got some beer, you know, got the boxing match." And I was like, "Beer?" You know, and so, I headed over there. And he, sure enough, you know, got in there. There's a chicken wings. He's sitting there drinking a beer. And I said, "Hey, where's the beer?" "It's in the fridge." Went to the fridge, opened it up, and there was a six-pack in there. It's a six-pack. And two of the beers were missing, you know. And it was like, "Well, wait a minute, man. I thought you said you had beer." And he goes, "Well, there is beer." And I was like, "Yeah, no. And now the boxing match is starting. He's like, "Hey, okay, man, here we go." And I was like, "Oh, hell no. I got to go get some beer." And so I had to leave, you know. I'm like, "Hey, I'm getting, you know, that's it, you know." And he was just, what, you know. And, you know, so I went and got a case of beer, you know, 18-pack. Came back to his house, you know, that box, you know, and since this was out of town, it like takes 20 minutes to get to the store, 20 minutes back, you know, and so I gotta come back, the boxing match is almost over with, and he's just like, you know, what's going on here? By this time, wife's kind of had it, right? She, you know, she's not allowing booze in the house anymore, right? And it's like, hey, there's no booze in the house. And there was, I had like a tell, you know, the tell was like, this vein on my head would just pop out about a half inch, you know, when I had too much alcohol. So she could see it, you know, like she could spot like from a half mile away. Whoa, you know, you've been drinking, you know. So, I mean, there was no getting away with it. It's like, you know, like rabbi, bandage around my head or something. I don't know. But she could see that I had been drinking. So I couldn't get away with it anymore. And I couldn't sit there at home drinking like a pig. I hear you talking like that, Mike, and that's, I really relate to that. I wanted to drink like a pig, and she wouldn't let me drink like a pig, at least not in front of her. And so what I started to do, Tommy, was to lock myself in hotel rooms. And not nice hotel rooms. These, you know, these ones down on K Street here, and, you know, and the ones that they tore down, those ones. And I'd lock myself in there with a bottle, and I could drink like a pig. And then I convinced myself, okay, I'm going to go home, right? I'm going to, you know, I'm going to have a few drinks, and then, you know, I'll pull myself together and go back home. Well, you know, that it wasn't happening. So I would be there 2 or 3 days, you know, till I ran out of money and was just hammered out of my mind, and then I would go back home. I would try to clean up, try to make up, and, you know, it then started, you know, the begging and the threatening and the, and, you know, my wife's trying to bargain with me. I mean, all this stuff, I mean, she's really trying. She's, you know, I mean, why the heck she put up with us, I don't know, but she did. And she was really, but that didn't make any difference at all to me, you know. It didn't, because the only thing that mattered to me was alcohol. I needed the alcohol. I needed to drink. And, you know, this, like, well, why don't you just stop, you know? No, you know, you don't get it. You know, there is no stopping. And so it was really amazing what I was willing to give up to keep drinking. So finally, I'm driving home. Once again, it's out in no man's land, and I wipe out, we have a new car, and I just wiped it out. I went through this T intersection, flew over this canal, and smashed into the embankment on the other side. And, you know, cops came out there, since it was, out in the middle of nowhere. Cops came out there like 5 hours later and pulled me out of the car. And, you know, of course, I'm just hammered, you know, put me in an ambulance, got me over to the hospital, ran a blood test on me. And this is like 6 hours after I had my last drink, I was registering as a 0.25. So, you know, I 6 hours earlier, I can only imagine what it had been. But I get thrown in Laredo. My wife comes and gets me out of there. We go drive to look at the car, and the car is in Delano in this thing, and it is in the shape of an L. I mean, the car was looked like that, you know. It was in an L shape. I was like, wow, how did I live, you know, through that? And my wife starts crying, and I said, you know, it's all right. I'm all right. I'll live. And she goes, she looked at me and was like, I love that car. You know? And so, I go, shit, you know. What about me, man? You know, and you know, I'd hurt my back. I hurt my chest because the airbag just hammered me in the chest. And so the doctor, so, you know, at this point, I'm like, okay, man, I really got to quit. You know, I got to drum up the kind of willpower that I know I can get, you know, like, hey, man, I put myself through college. I put myself through high school, put myself through college. I got to, you know, conned my way into an advertising agency. You know, I mean, I can do this. I can do this. And so I quit drinking. But the doctor had given, you know, I quit drinking for like a month. But because I had gotten hurt, the doctor had given me these copious amounts of Vicodin, you know. So I was like, well, thank God I got this, you know. And so I had plenty of Vicodin to get me through that period of non-drinking. And then, of course, when the Vicodin ran out, I had to go back, you know. I had to start drinking again. And okay, you know, it started getting to the point of like I would wake up in the morning and I would say, I'm not going to drink today. I'm not going to do it. I'm just not going to do it. And I've made solemn vows to myself. This isn't going to happen. And so sometimes a half hour later, I was drinking again. And I don't know how that was happening. That is when it got, for me, that's when it got real, man. It's like, okay, I just said like a half hour ago, I'm not going to do this anymore. And how am I in this hotel room drinking? I mean, it was like completely, completely out of my control. And it was there when I realized I'm going to die. I'm going to die from this, you know, or like for real. And either I'm going to kill myself, I'm going to freaking hang myself in one of the, you know, with a shower curtain, or I'm just going to drop dead from this. You know, like the big book says, the quicksand stretched in all directions, and there was no way out. You know, I just like, wow, man, this is it. This is how this is going to end, you know? Like, is it for real? This is how I'm going to die, you know? And, you know, so I checked myself into that Fresno treatment center at that point. And I told you a little bit about, you know, like, you know, how's that working out for you? You know, got past the guy with the clipboard. And, you know, what I really wanted was to control my drinking. You know, I wanted to control my drinking or stop drinking. And what I really wanted was, like, to put this freaking nightmare behind me, you know, and pretend it never happened, you know. And that really is what I wanted. And I was told that my experience was really the most valuable thing I had, which, you know, and so during this time in the treatment center, they had us do, you know, basically a three steps, and then it kind of was a fourth step and a fifth step, where we had to make a list of people we had hurt, stupid things we had done, and then tell it to the group. And so I wrote it down. I made some notes, and I told it to the group. And after I was done telling everybody this, I took that piece of paper and I folded it as many times as I could possibly fold it and stuffed it under my desk. And the counselor there said, you know, I appreciate your honesty, because I told it like it was. I didn't really pull any punches. And he says, but I want you to take that piece of paper you just stuffed under your desk there, and I want you to take that out and unfold it, and I want you to put that in your top pocket. And for the rest of the time you're here, I want you to walk around with that in your pocket, because that experience is the most valuable thing you've got. It's the thing that's going to keep you sober, because the way you're going to stay sober is, one of the ways is helping other alcoholics. And the only way you're going to help other alcoholics is with that story. And so if you want to remain sober, you're going to hang on to that story. And so I did. And but when I got out of the treatment center, I promptly didn't go to meetings, didn't read the big book, didn't get a sponsor, didn't work the steps. Why? I had to figure it out, man, right? I mean, like, okay, I get it. I just can't drink, you know. I think I'll be all right. There's a spot in the big book that talks about a guy coincidentally named Jim who decides that it's okay to drink again because he could put whiskey in his milk and it should be okay. And that was the kind of thinking that happened to me. I was told, if you're a true alcoholic, if you're like us and you're a true alcoholic, you will go back out for some insanely trivial reason. And sure enough, there I was, July day, in Visalia, pumping gas. You know, it's hot out, you know, like, man, it's like living on the sun around here. And, you know, and I thought, it popped into my head, hey, you know what, a cold beer would be good right about now. And that thought was no sooner popped into my head than I was on my way. Coincidentally, too, I was at the gas station that I had normally bought my beer at. And so I had a little routine already in my head there. You know, I walked in, got my 16-ounce beer, got a styrofoam cup, might as well get a couple of these little mini Kesslers here to supercharge this beer. And, you know, got the styrofoam cup, put it together, and I was ready to go. And I was driving from Visalia to where I lived near Delano. And so I got to about Pixley and said, well, you know, I gotta reload here. But, you know, I got another beer, did the same thing with the other beer, and then thought, you know, I better get a pint of Kesslers, too. And then I got home, and, you know, what I did, too, was I bought a six-pack. I bought a six-pack of beer, too. And so, because I realized, my wife is going to smell this when I get home, and she's going to see the vein, you know? And so I drove home, and I got into the driveway, and I cracked a beer. And I walked into the house with five beers and this beer that I was drinking. And she said, what are you doing? You know, and I said, I can have a beer now and then. And she was like, you got to be kidding me. After all we've been through? And I go, you know, but I had been sober for like over a year, I think. And so she was like, well, maybe he's cured, you know. Thanks, you know, my wife's a normie. She has no clue, you know. And so she's thinking, well, he did go like a year. He's got to be cured now. And so I got away with that. And so I was back on, right? We all know this, you know, you're back on, right? This isn't where it's going to stop, right? So just checking the time here. So I, started drinking again, and then it, you know, even how long was it before I, you know, was locked back in a hotel room again, looking out a window with a bottle of booze, you know, drinking like a pig again, and I was amazed. I just thought, I remember looking out that window, just going, I can't believe I'm back here, and so. And so I after, you know, a number of, you know, incidences of humiliation and incomprehensible demoralization, I, on May 20th, 2001, I stopped drinking. I started going to meetings, got the big book, started reading the big book, started working the steps, got a sponsor. Got in the service, and I got in the service. The sponsor I had was a very crafty guy. He, you know, we were in a meeting, and he said, you know, hey, secretary of this meeting has been here for a while. Why don't we get a new secretary? And everyone said, yeah, it's time. And he said, I nominate Jim. Like, what? You know, and he did that to me again later on with a GSR position. He said, hey, I need a kind of a backup, because he was a GSR, and he said, I need a backup for GSR for this other meeting, and I need a backup. Why don't you show up in the main office for the meeting, and I'll meet you there. And so I showed up at the main office for the meeting, and he wasn't there. And then they said, oh, yeah, Dave called and said, you're the new GSR now. And so, you know, and so this is the thing that he was doing to me. And God bless him, really, you know. It wasn't funny at the time, but, there was a guy, Johnny D, Medicated John. I don't know if any of you remember John, but John needed a ride everywhere, and so I would get these incessant calls from John, you know, every day, multiple times a day. You know, you gonna drive me to this meeting, John? Yeah, I said I'd drive you to this meeting. Okay, I'll talk to you later, man. You know, 5 minutes later, you know, hey, man, you gonna take me to that meeting, John? Yeah, man. So I mean, that went on all day long, and I had to take him to a meeting every single day, but every meeting that John went to, I went to. And so there was genius at work there. I don't know. It was, it was a God thing, I think, because I was going to a lot of meetings. I got my 30 day, well, when I hit 30 days, I thought, you know, instead of getting my chip, I just sat there. So anybody got 30 days? And I sat there. And John said, hey, man, go get your chip. And I go, nah, you know, I mean, it's people with serious sobriety here. I'm not going to pick up a 30-day chip. And he looked at me and said, hey, man, that chip's not for you. It's for other people, so that other people can see that someone as sick as you can get 30 days. So, okay, yeah, I guess that is, yeah, okay. And he's like, you self-centered son of a bitch, you know. And so I got my 30-day chip, you know, and thanks to Johnny D. I did go to 90 meetings in 90 days, and I started getting this program. I started letting this program do its thing. You know, problem was is that I wanted everything back right away. At about 90 days, I started saying, hey, man, I got 90 days sobriety. I haven't had 90 days sobriety in like 25 years, you know. And so, you know, I was like, I wanted my wife's trust back. I wanted my, you know, I worked as an advertising director for this guy here in the Valley. And I was managing like $300,000 of his money, you know. And so, like, you know, this guy, when I get out of treatment, you know, and I, you know, what's his problem? What, doesn't he trust me? You know, and it's like, you know, and so. I wanted all this stuff back. I wanted, you know, my wife had two daughters from previous marriage, but you know, I helped raise them, and they wouldn't let me, when I was drinking, they wouldn't let me drive their kids around, my grandkids, right? They didn't want them in the car with me, you know, but that stuff, I started getting their trust back. I started getting the wife's trust back. You know, but it was really slow. It didn't happen overnight. My wife called my wife up from work one time and said, how's things going? And she goes, you sound weird. And I was like, what do you mean? She goes, you sound like you've been drinking. And I said, I haven't been drinking. She said, you always say that when you've been drinking. And I said, oh, shit, you know? And so, I mean, I was working in Visalia. She's living, you know, we're living out near Delano. I had to get in the car, drive home, so that she could see this vein isn't sticking out of my head, you know? And she saw, once I got out of the car, she could see, oh, yeah, he hasn't been drinking. And you know, how mad could I really get at her? You know, honestly, I thought about it. I was like, do I get mad at her? I was like, no, I freaking created this situation. I really did. I was like, I couldn't even be mad at her. And you know, so there was a long time. That trust took a long time, and it's still, you know, I mean, here I am, you know, 16 plus years later, and you know, she still kind of looks at me sideways. You know, I'm telling her I'm coming to this meeting, for example. She's a normie, you know. She doesn't know, like, where are you really going, you know? And you know, so I mean, it's not over, but It's better. It's a lot better. It's a lot better. You know, I got grandkids who love me. You know, my daughters love me, and it's good stuff, man. You know, and what I came to believe was that I had a spiritual problem, not a drinking problem. My personal choice right at first was I wanted to fight, you know, I'm going to fight this thing, you know, and I learned real quickly I was fighting a gorilla that was kicking my ass, you know, and that I had to surrender and accept the fact that I couldn't drink anymore. As Dr. Bob says, I had abused my right to drink so badly that I gave up the right to drink, and I had to accept that. I had to accept that I was not the center of the universe, that I was powerless over many things. You know, I had to find a power bigger than me. I had to face up to the things I've done wrong, apologize to people, forgive people. You know, this is a big deal. Make a list of people that you've got resentments against. I remember thinking, I don't have resentments against anybody. You know, my sponsor told me, start writing down names of everybody you know. And you know what? Every person that I knew, I had some kind of serious resentment in, you know? I mean, you know, it's like, you know, it was really eye-opening. And so I can't get in any power-driven arguments either. I don't get involved in political discussions. I stay away from some any power-driven arguments. The idea that I was going to ask God for help too was a big one. You know, it's like, hey man, you know, I went to this Catholic grade school where, you know, God was a pretty rough dude, man, and I had to come to an understanding of who my God was going to be, and he's a good God. He's a good guy, and the idea that if I sincerely asked for help, it would be given to me. You know, I really was beyond human aid. And so this idea that, you know, that I was like, well, come on, man. Is it, you know, really? If I sincerely ask God for help, he's going to give it to me. And the answer is yes. And it is how it works. I don't know, man. I don't know. It works, though. You know, I had to stop asking myself why it works and simply accept the fact that it works. The other idea that I always had, this idea that other people were to blame, these outside forces working against me, man, you know, it was like, you know, these people, places, and things, and that's not what's happening at all. I mean, what's happening is life's unfolding before me, depending on the choices I'm making. I mean, it was as simple as that. It was like, I'm creating the life that I want, you know, and the life that I wanted apparently was locked in a hotel room with a bottle. And you know, it was only until I said, I really don't want this life, man. I didn't want that life anymore. I didn't want to be disappointing the people I loved and the people who loved me. I didn't want to do that anymore. I really did want to stop drinking, and I really wanted a better life. I wanted to be a good citizen. You know, I mean, the life I was leading, man, I was not a good citizen. But I wanted to be a good citizen. The way I'm doing this is I've stayed sober for 16 years, 174 days, and 9 hours now. And I, you know, thank you. But the only thing I've really got is today. That's it. I woke up this morning. I didn't drink. You know, and you know, if I make it for the next few hours, I'll make it till the end of the day. You know, I don't have 16 years. I got today, you know. And I'm keeping my side of the street clean. I'm helping others. I'm staying connected to meetings. I'm talking to members of this group, and I trust in God. And you know, if you can't do these things and you think you can do it alone, you know, the question is, how's that working out for you? So, I'm Jim. I'm an alcoholic.